Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us. And baseball was back over the weekend. How about this? No sweeps on opening weekend, and so every team is either 2-1 or 1-2. No team began 3-0. This is the first time this has happened in 66 years. No team begins 3-0. Joining us to discuss opening weekend for Major League Baseball, you see him on the MLB Network. He's also host of DAZN's MLB coverage as well. He's also the host of the Cinephile podcast because he is a huge movie buff, our friend Adnan Virk. Adnan, good morning.
DA, good morning, man. What's going on? Thank you for the flowery introduction. I hope you and yours are holding up relatively well.
Thanks so much for that. Absolutely, we are. Hopefully back at you. Same for you guys. And opening weekend was here, and I want to read to you a start of the story from ESPN.com with the headline, Christian Yelich, not Mike Trout, is MLB's best player. This story cites right now over the last year and a half the type of numbers that has made Yelich an MVP, that they've been better than Mike Trout. And yet Yelich had a really rough weekend at the plate, only one hit in 13 at-bats. Do you believe that for the last 18 months, Yelich has been better than Trout?
I don't. It's a provocative column and headline, and I'm sure there's good supporting evidence to point out stats like Trout's batting average of .291. Was the lowest he had last season, you know, in about 7 years, whatever it is. Yelich offensively did, just, you know, obviously tears the cover off the ball. His last 2 seasons have been tremendous. But I would argue, listen, the NL MVP, I agree with the fact it wasn't Yelich. How could he be the second best player to Trout the last year and a half? And he wasn't even the MVP a season ago in the National League. But I agree, Bellinger was the right choice. You know, Yelich got hurt, missed the last couple of weeks, and maybe that hurt him a little bit. But the big difference is defensively, you know, Yelich is not strong. If you look at defensive runs saved, which is the most popular measure now to judge a player's defensive efficiency, Bellinger's off the charts compared to Yelich, and Trout figures pretty well. Now, the one thing about Trout, it's not a weakness. It's just that he's not off the charts when it comes to his throwing arm. But as far as tracking the ball, making plays, et cetera, he's superior defensively to Yelich. I think he's a better base runner. But like I said, listen, Yelich, an incredible player. There's no denying that. I personally wouldn't put him number two. I find normally, DA, whenever I have conversations about who's number two, it's generally the guy I was watching last night against the Giants, which is Mookie Betts. I think a lot of people think Mookie Betts is that guy who's number two. But listen, Yelich is great. Tough opening weekend. I was just glad to be able to see him and Mike Trout. And by the way, Trout, first time ever in his career, goes deep on a 3-0 pitch in his 10th season. Normally never gets the green light there, or at least chooses not to get the green light. So something new every year.
What did you think about the Dodgers ponying up for Mookie Betts when they had not seen him play a game for them yet, knowing that the Red Sox said, no thanks, we're not willing to go that much for Mookie Betts? What did you think about the Dodgers' decision there?
Well, I love the fact that, listen, if you want something in life and you've got the resources, then just take care of business. You know, it's like buying a car and you say, well, you know, the pandemic and what's happened, maybe the car prices will come down versus saying, no, but I love this car. I know it's got good value for me. It's what we've always wanted. And I've got the money, so let's just go ahead and do it. That's what the Dodgers did. Rather than risk the chance that Mookie Betts could go elsewhere and pay a little less money, that, you know what, we'll pay what we think is fair right now and probably feels like more than teams have expected, 12 years, 365. But I thought Buster Olney made a great point last night on Sunday Night Baseball, which is that it's not a conventional deal and that it's a lot of deferred money. I don't know the exact number. I think it's over $100 million. I think it's $112 million is deferred money. And so Buster was making the point, Mookie does not have a no-trade clause, but if he does get traded, he gets all that money up front. So that's interesting. I'm like, okay, so Mookie does get that preservation of feeling like he's going to be in L.A. for 12 years, even without the no-trade clause. And listen, he's a spectacular player. We all know his offensive prowess. He's a former MVP. He's a five-tool player. I love his defense. I mean, I was talking with Brian Kenny and Tom Verducci, Ron Darling, with the fact that, you know, it's Studio 21 where you and I have hung out doing MLB Now. You know, that studio is named after Roberto Clemente, the greatest defensive right fielder of all time. And Mookie's right up there, man. One day he's got four gold gloves. Clemente had 12. Mookie's second in defensive run saves since 2016. He hits for power, hits for average, great base runner, et cetera. So if I'm the Dodgers, it's all right. We locked up our cornerstone. And here's something really interesting, DA. Financial commitments. The Dodgers hadn't locked up anybody through 2022. So they felt pretty good about being able to do this now. Bellinger's a free agent after 2023. Walker Buehler after 2024. So anyone saying, all right, seven straight division titles is time running out? Well, no. They've got their guys for at least a couple more years.
The Dodgers developed their farm system so well, didn't wrap up big contracts and free agents and veterans, and then they had the cash to splash for Mookie Betts. In New York, Giancarlo Stanton, who's been a punching bag for the New York tabloids and fans for a while now, has two monster colossal home runs. Is there reason to believe we could get MVP caliber Giancarlo Stanton in the Bronx?
I'd love to see it, man. You're absolutely right. Living here in the tri-state area of North Jersey, he gets smoked, whether it's my neighbor Anthony, who's a diehard Yankees fan, starts lamenting Stanton. Here's the thing with these big contracts, you and I well know. Then you get a bullseye on your back. All of a sudden it goes from this guy's a great player to this guy's $325 million and he's luggage and this and that and all the rest of it. And by the way, Stanton, of course, endures criticism for good reason. He hasn't been healthy, and therefore when you're not healthy, you haven't been able to perform, put up big numbers. But it's been great to see him. And as you said, those shots were, dare we say, ruthie and absolutely smoked them. And he looks a little leaner. And Aaron Boone said he noticed it right away as soon as he got into camp. And I don't think Stan's ever was overweight at all, but he goes, he's just in really good shape now. He's lost 10 pounds and transformed his body. Anthony Rizzo's another guy. I never thought he was overweight, but now you see him, oh, my God, he looks stealthy. He's dropped barely like 30 pounds. So I love the fact that guys like Stanton and Rizzo have clearly dedicated themselves, gotten to even better shape. My feeling was, in this shortened season with the enormous delay because of the pandemic, that pitchers would generally have the advantage just because, you know, it's harder for hitters to get timing down. Look at April. April, normally, hitters take a little while. In the summer months, they feel good. Now, summer months when the ball should be flying, it could be a challenge for hitters to work on their timing, although in the case of Stanton, clearly, already has hit the ground running, and that is a big, big sign for the Yankees. If they can keep him healthy, I think that's proof that he can be productive.
Adnan Virk joins us this morning here on the show talking about the return of baseball over the weekend. We had a rash of starting pitchers get injured. We had Marcus Stroman. Then we saw Justin Verlander, Clayton Kershaw scratched, Steven Strasburg as well. Do you point to the long layoff and what happened with the restart of the season as a reason why, or do you think it's disconnected?
I think it's disconnected. I would love to connect the dots because you're right. Those are some big names. But I look at each one on a case-by-case basis and go, all right, Kershaw's always had back issues, a little bit wonky, and there's no reason to push it. Let's just be careful because in their minds, the Dodgers, it is opening day. Fine, it's only 60 games, but don't start getting the feeling of every game we have to win if all of a sudden Kershaw gets hurt in opening day and then he's gone for 2 months. In the case of Verlander, the story came out erroneously. The first he was done for the season, and then he himself had to say, no, it's a forearm strain. I should be back in a couple weeks. Just, you know, slow your roll. Strasburg, again, prior to last season, has had injury issues. So, again, there's a guy who's had that problem before. And who was the other one that you mentioned?
Stroman.
Stroman. So Stroman, I mean, generally, again, healthy, but smaller guy. And again, what I thought was interesting is the disconnect to him as manager, because I was on the Zoom call with Luis Rojas, who said originally, okay, it's day-to-day, and then the next day it changed on Thursday to week-to-week, and then eventually Stroman said, no, it's super minor, I'll be back soon. Meantime, it's a tear in his calf. Again, I'm not a doctor, but that sounds like you're not coming back right away. I would love to kind of find out some reason to it, because you're right, those are four pretty big names. But I think two of those guys have had injuries before. The other two guys, it was just bad luck.
We got to talk about Daniel Bard, because there might not be fans that remember his first stint in baseball nearly a decade ago, but he has not played in baseball since 2013. He got the yips. He bounced around the minors. Career was on ice. And now he is back and pitching in Major League Baseball for the first time in 7 years. It is just one of the most remarkable Disney-esque movie storylines, and you love movies. I mean, how incredible is the Hollywood script of Daniel Bard?
I'm glad you mentioned it, man. Listen, Jim Morris, the rookie, we had Dennis Quaid. Let's start casting for Daniel Bard. Surely it's a script that Shakespeare would love, being the Bard himself. Listen, sometimes in baseball, you don't hear names for a little while, and then they bounce back and go, oh, yeah, what happened to that guy? Well, he was in the minors for a couple years. Maybe he had Tommy John. Now he's back. For Daniel Bard, that's a name that all baseball fans would know, but I think most would not realize it's been 7 years since you've been saying the name Daniel Bard. And the whole concept of the yips, now I understand it happens in other sports, you know, whether it's Shaquille O'Neal not hitting on free throws or other examples of such, but generally in baseball, it's particularly fascinating when Mackie Sasser can't throw back the mound or Steve Sack can't make a throw to first base. It's always amazing to me, and it just shows how psychological baseball is now, so much between the ears. And for Daniel Bard to overcome that, I mean, that's the best story I've heard since Rick Ankiel. And Ankiel's story is different in that he had the yips with those wild pitches in that playoff game, unforgettably, and then came back as a hitter and was a decent hitter for a few seasons and now has written a book about it, et cetera. For Bard, I think it's even more impressive because it's not like he changed positions. He didn't come back as an outfielder. He said, no, I'm going to go back on the mound and conquer this issue, affliction, et cetera. I don't know where he's going to go, but I'm sure he's sleeping a lot better at night, D.A., and people should be proud of it. Anybody who overcomes any sort of challenges in life says, all right, I can do this. Even though it's a Herculean challenge, 7 years later, he's got the proof that the perseverance paid off.
Adnan Virk is our guest from MLB Network, DAZN as well, MLB coverage there. So how about the Cubs? They've got their big boppers, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, and Jason Hayward, a combined 6-for-45 this weekend. And yet, they pitched so well, they took 2 out of 3 against the Brewers anyway. What to make of the meat of the Cubs' order being so quiet this weekend?
Well, it's interesting. It's definitely a different vibe around that team. You know, so many teams made moves. You know, you look at the Reds and what they did. You look at the White Sox and what they did, crosstown rivals. And look at the Cubs, and they're like, nope, nothing to see here. Like, you know, we've lost Castellanos. Other than that, we're just going to hope that we get better production from the likes of you, Darvish, and John Lester. And, again, rely on those big bats you mentioned of Rizzo, Bryant, et cetera, after entertaining some thought perhaps would be Chris Bryant. And I love David Ross, of course. I worked with Ross at ESPN. He's a great guy, great manager. He's going to be very loose with these guys. But you're right. It makes his job as a manager a lot easier if the guys can pitch. And I think for most of us, if you look at the Cubs team, the NL Central is going to be the toughest division to determine in baseball. Like, I've got four teams within 3 wins of each other, and that's outside of field. Maybe there could be tiebreakers involved when it's all said and done. And the Cubs are in that mix with the Brewers and the Reds. And the Cardinals, those are the four, of course, Pirates only ones out of it. But for the Cubs, they're going to need production because ultimately, I didn't think there'd be a trade deadline this year, but yes, there is a trade deadline. So we can already start talking about teams on the block because August 31st, we're going to have trades being done. And it doesn't look like, if you look at the Cubs' history this past offseason, they're looking to move anybody right now. So all production, all success has to come from within. They have to hope that it was just opening weekend jitters. And if the hitters weren't there, thank goodness the pitchers were, because I think that was the bigger question mark for most, is whether or not the Cubs' pitching will be better than it was a season ago.
So we have developing news that is breaking as we, you and I, have talked over the last couple of minutes. We know the Miami Marlins had a few positive tests as well. They said instead of going back down to Miami, we're going to delay this thing. And now sources are telling Major League Baseball writers that tonight's game between the Marlins and the Orioles in Miami has been canceled, and the Marlins are staying in Philadelphia, that today's game between the Marlins and the Orioles has been canceled. Ken Rosenthal, the latest to report that just 4 minutes ago. So what do you think happens here with the Marlins? This is the first really big challenge for rebooting baseball amidst the pandemic.
Yeah, my whole thought has been, D.A., you know, whether or not we can get through this, you know, you literally have to take it, to use the cliche, day by day. And every day I've been watching, listen, okay, it's, and I'm, by my count, it's about 100 days. If the World Series ends on Halloween, you know, October, September, August, and July, looking at about 100 days. So I'm like, all right, day four, 96 to go, and this is the first real challenge right away. We know that California, the cases are the most in the country. Florida is now second and ahead of New York State, which was obviously battered so badly, as we know. This is going to be a challenge, and there's no doubt about it. And Rob Manfred and the commissioner's office does have the opportunity to move the team if they like for the duration of the season. If they feel like Florida is too risky, that they can move them in another state or find another facility, et cetera. But what I find telling is Don Mattingly said, no, we're most comfortable in Miami. I know people think that the numbers here are spiking, and they are, but we actually don't feel safer than when we're at home. And the thought is maybe that some of those guys, Urania and others, contracted the virus when they went to Atlanta. And as we know, Georgia is another hotspot right now. So for them, the fear is more about travel. And listen, the most important thing is you have to take the consensus of those around you. And there's two big things here with the players. One, they said, all right, four guys tested positive. Do we play or not? How are we feeling? And everyone was unanimous in saying, nope, let's keep playing. And the second thought was, all right, do we scurry back to get home, not knowing the results, because it takes 2 days to get the, obviously take the test to get the results back, or just wait a day? And everyone said, wait a day. And I think that's important. That you, the last thing you want is a rash judgment. The last thing you want is to be hasty. And if one game has to get canceled out of 60, I don't know how many games are being played tonight in baseball. Let's say there's 12 games. All right, if one out of 12 are canceled, that's fine. Like, we don't be hysterical about it. Let's focus on what we can do. And literally take it step by step. Try to make up the game later on for the Marlins. Maybe it doesn't get made up. Figure out what happened to these guys. Contact tracing is critical. But you're right, 4 days in and already there's the one big red flag right away is, what about the Marlins?
So maybe this is a bit of a hand guide on the rest of the season, that if they are worried at all about an outbreak on a team or where they're playing, it's just take a breather day. We're not going to play today. We punt. We live to see another day tomorrow, and we just see how it goes. This could be the way that Major League Baseball season kind of unfolds, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so, because Mattingly made another point, which was that, you know, they have this pool, as we all know, but 60 players the teams can pluck from, and there's a three-player taxi squad that travels with the team. And Mattingly said yesterday, because, you know what, I think the taxi squad actually should be larger. So maybe Major League Baseball says, okay, in situations like this, let's take a breath. If we're going to cancel the game, fine. We're going to postpone it for a day, whatever it takes. And in addition to that, if there's no opportunity to do so, or the teams feel like, no, we'd rather just play, let's have more players at our disposal. Because Mattingly's right. If four guys test positive and there's only three available, and those three, you know, none of them are a pitcher, and one of the guys was the pitcher, Urania, well, maybe that should be something that should be looked at. Maybe also should be five players available, et cetera. So as we all know, it's going to be a work in progress. And I thought Ron Darling put it well when everyone kept saying, it's a sprint and not a marathon. He goes, no, this is survival. Like, can you survive to the finish? It's a team that in many ways that's going to be the healthiest that could come out of this the most successful.
Before I let you go, we love your podcast, the Cinephile Podcast, because you are such a huge movie buff and you've talked movies with us in the past. And during quarantine, we have broken down one sports film every week, really the sports behind it, like it was a sports event. And it's been a lot of fun, really popular segment for us. And so this week, Angels in the Outfield gets a review from the DA show. What are your thoughts on the 1990s film, Angels in the Outfield?
Well, I haven't seen it in a long time, so I would need to brush up on my notes, but it is okay. A charming movie. You know, with baseball, it's so rife with nostalgia and sentiment, and what I think is nice is that, you know, there's only a few baseball movies that can really be merciless, if one could say, in showing the sport, perhaps that it's worth. Something like Eight Men Out, of course, is about the gambling scandal and showing how players are compromised, et cetera. Generally, when you think of baseball movies, you think of the fun part of life, and you think of Major League and the sentimentality of Field of Dreams, et cetera. So Angels in the Outfield goes in that long list of movies that are sweet and charming and pleasant diversions. And I think, at the risk of being hokey, it shows the magic of baseball. I mean, literally, there are angels in the outfield, and there's some angels helping us out in life, as always, whether you're a baseball fan or not. So that's probably a fun movie to revisit. I should probably watch that with my kids. They're probably at the age now they can watch that.
Did you like The Natural? Because we reviewed that, and we were disappointed. We were underwhelmed by The Natural.
I completely agree. And the reason is, I read the book, which is outstanding, by Bernard Malamud. And in the ending, spoiler alert, he strikes out. And he gets released. And the story is just being
presented. Wow!
Yeah, that Roy Hobbs threw the game. And I'll never forget the line via the writer Malamud. He's really good. The line was, Hobbs descended down the stairs choking on his own self-loathing. And I was like, oh, my God, what a line.
Wow.
And the movie could not be more Hollywoodized and not more
sentimental. Oh, man.
I love the people involved. Levinson's a great director, obviously, Rain Man and so many others. But the fact that he hits a home run in the light tower in slow motion, it's just ridiculous of its own merit. But if you've read the book, it's even more reason to be furious and to literally throw the movie across the screen and him and Glenn Close and their baby. I mean, Robert Redford's a handsome guy, and I get the fact you want to give him a hero's ending, but the book was far, far superior. And Max Mercy, again, I love Duvall, but as me and Tim Kirchner said, I've never seen a sports writer quite that evil. I don't think he's really that bad.
Adnan Virk, check out his Cinephile podcast, the Adnan Virk Movie Podcast. Also, watch him on MLB Network and follow him on Twitter at Adnan S. Virk. Always good to catch up, my man. Thanks so much for doing it with us this morning. Can't wait to do it again.
You got it, DA. Take care, buddy. Hope I'll see you soon.
You too. Adnan Virk joining us this morning on the show. And look, this is why you have Adnan on the show. Because we're not smart enough nor diligent enough to read the book of The Natural. He had to do the homework for us and tells us that the book's ending, Miraz of The Natural, is way better than the movie. I mean, the movie, he hits a home run that shatters the lights to win the game. In the book, he throws the game and purposefully strikes out. That ending is awesome.
Now, wait a minute.
I would have much preferred that ending. And also just brings me to the next point. People have said for a long time, books are always better than the movies, right? And I have been a big proponent of saying, if you've made it into a movie, there's no need for me to read the book. Clearly, this is a situation where I am wrong. But I would ask this. Why the heck would you change the ending? Why? What good does it do for movie purposes? That's still a great ending. Why would you change the ending?
Especially that dramatically.
Yes.
I mean, it goes from he tosses the game, strikes out, to he crushes a home run that shatters the lights. Remember, the whole thing about The Natural that we couldn't quite wrap our mind around was, is he an angel? Is he a demigod? Is he from a different universe? Remember, that's the whole thing, is that he's not quite human because he's able to crush a home run into the light and he's like a Jesus figure, and yet he throws the game like Shoeless Joe Jackson? Now, that's a completely different, you know, narrative on this. Wow, no wonder the movie stunk.
Yeah, I feel way better, too, by the way, knowing that Adnan thought it stuck too, because that makes me feel like we're onto something. If Peter Schwartz thinks the movie's really good and Adnan Virk thinks it's terrible, I'm going to go that way, so it tells me our instincts are right, DA.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you 100%. When we come back here on the show, Oklahoma football is planning to play as the schedule says. So, can they really pull this off and play on time coming up in a few weeks? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
The DA show is highly intellectual. We're all the way from no IQ to the high IQ. We are cutting edge on this show. Cutting edge.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Sometimes. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit, car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. And the DA show every single day is on your smart speaker. So if you want to wake up with us, have us on around your house, tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio, and it'll stream the DA show live. We just had Adnan Virk on as breaking news happened. Tonight's Marlins and Orioles game has been canceled. The Marlins have had an outbreak on their team of positive tests. I don't think that this threatens the season. I don't think so at all. I agree with Adnan that this is going to be the protocol for baseball, where if a team has an outbreak, its game or games have to be canceled. My guess is the Marlins have to forfeit this if they can't find a proper makeup date between them and the Orioles. And such is life. That's the loss that the Marlins have to take in the standings. But you have one team test positive 3 days, 4 days into your season, you're not canceling the entire season. It's just not happening, and nor should it. You know, there's going to be, I think,
things like this that pop up. And if enough things like this happen and enough teams test positive and enough teams can't field a team or you have to start canceling games, yeah, it might end up canceling the season if you just don't have teams that can play. But it's not going to cancel the season today. It's one game right now out of 60 for the Marlins and Orioles. Hopefully they can make it up, and hopefully they can play tomorrow. If they can't, you have to start canceling multiple games. But again, that's not enough to cancel an entire season for one team or every team. You can't do that yet. So this could lead to more stuff, but it might not. You can't make some drastic knee-jerk, oh, they're going to cancel Major League Baseball because they can't play the Marlins and Orioles game tonight. But it is the first flare that you see from a distance that you go, oh, right, this is going to be the way that things might be. Now, note, English Premier League, Bundesliga, international soccer, those leagues didn't have to cancel matches. NASCAR has not canceled a race. MLS hasn't canceled a game. Now, the PGA Tour has had to manipulate its schedule. But in the team sports and NASCAR, they haven't had to cancel games. So this is not a good early sign for baseball. Just because it happens here doesn't mean it's going to happen in NBA or NHL. Those are bubbles. These are not. But you're not going to cancel Major League Baseball today. That's a total overreaction. So Oklahoma did something interesting. They got a waiver from the NCAA to start their season a week early. They've got a non-conference game against Missouri State, which was supposed to be week two of the season. Instead, they're moving it up to week one, which means they'll play at the moment Oklahoma, Missouri State. Oklahoma, of course, national championship contender, August 29th. And they'll have an open date after that. They've just moved week two to week one. They had the bye week one. So you have that, and then they'll play Tennessee at Norman, September 12th, and then have a bye after that. Look, I like it. I like it for Oklahoma's purposes because it gives them a breather week in between their games. Now, I don't know if they're going to end up playing this game against Missouri State. I mean, I know that the Big 12 and the SEC still holding out hope that they can play non-conference games. We know that leagues like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten say no non-conference games. We're just going to go right to the conference season. So we'll see if this ends up getting played. But in terms of trying to schedule a safe way to do this, Oklahoma's basically going, okay, let's play a game, have a bye. Play a game, have a bye. Let's try to figure out with a breather week, some more time in between, how things are going to work. How we've got it executed, what our protocol is going to be, yada, 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 which makes a lot of sense. You know, time is your friend in a lot of these situations because with time, you get more knowledge. You get to pick up knowledge every single day. You get to learn more, make a more informed decision. Space, time, important. So I like what Oklahoma's trying to do here. I don't know if it's going to matter because they might not be able to play their non-conference games anyway. But if they do, having a week in between, I think it works. We'll see, though, because, of course, we're coming up on August. By the end of the week, we'll have August number one on Saturday. And once August number one rolls around, well, college football is supposed to be starting up their camps and having guys practice and players get together and teams getting together. We'll see if that's realistic or if these leagues are going to have to kind of push it a little bit farther down the road. As I've said before, I think that these leagues will try to the last breath to try to get this season in the fall. And if at the very last breath they can't get it in the fall, I think that's when they'll push to the spring. But everything will be exhausted to play these games. I mean, Wisconsin saying that it would lose $100 million by not playing football this year. You tell me. You think that college football's going to simply say, hey, you know what? We'll see in 2021. If they could lose $100 million, no chance. They'll do everything in their power to play this season. Might mean the spring, but they're going to try, I'm sure, every last possible way to play it in the fall. Standing by with our headlines is Andrew Bogish. AB, good morning.
DA, good morning. So it is apparently very bad within the Miami Marlins right now. ESPN says 8 more players and 2 coaches have now tested positive for COVID-19. That brings the total to 14 positive tests within the club. The Marlins did not leave Philadelphia after yesterday afternoon's 11-6 win because of the possible outbreak. They are now not leaving for home yet, and they will not host the O's this evening. Now, the problems are more than just that because the Yankees come into Philadelphia behind the Marlins, who were obviously just there. We don't know when these Marlin players actually became infected. Since the testing came on Friday, they were sick before Friday, which means they could have exposed airport workers, hotel staff this whole time. The very real question should be, though, why they played their game yesterday in Philadelphia. It might not have changed all that much, but it was another 4, 5, 6 hours of exposure to everybody else in the ballpark, including the Phillies, by the way, because they knew what was going on, and they still should. They played yesterday, and clearly they shouldn't have. This is on top of Red second baseman Mike Moustakas going on the IL after waking up feeling sick yesterday. Center fielder Nick Senzel was also under the weather. He was just scratched from the lineup, though. Matt Davidson was the Reds DH on Friday. He tested positive on Saturday. Then there is the normal injury news. Justin Verlander strongly denying reports he's done for the season with an elbow issue. Verlander did that via a tweet. Manager Dusty Baker spoke with reporters after a home loss to Seattle.
We know it's a forearm strain. And, you know, he's being seen by the doctor, so he'll probably be shut down for a couple of weeks. And then we'll see.
And don't forget, Verlander had groin surgery back in March for an issue that developed during spring training. On the field last night, the Giants snuck past the Dodgers 3-1 for a 4-game split in L.A., and the Braves demolished the Mets 14-1 in Queens. Dansby Swanson homered, tied a career high with 5 RBI. It is a chicken wing run that'll live in basketball infamy. Clippers guard Lou Williams, on an excused absence from the bubble, was at an Atlanta strip club on Thursday. He says, just for dinner. Williams must now quarantine for 10 days, which means he'll miss the Clips' first 2 seeding games. Teammate Pat Beverly is reportedly back in Orlando, too. His quarantine is TBD. Kristaps Porzingis missed the Mavs scrimmage yesterday because he had a day of quarantine for missing his daily COVID test. The NFLPA reminded agents this week, or over the weekend, I should say, that players could end up not getting paid if it's proven they contacted COVID-19 through reckless behavior. Such a designation could allow teams to put the players on the non-football injury list, which doesn't require them to get paid. Now, as more and more players go through testing protocols ahead of training camps, we have our first batch of players on the COVID-19 list. It is 6 total from 5 teams. Most notably is Browns reserve running back Dontrell Hilliard. He returned kicks and punts last season, scored twice on the ground. The Arizona Coyotes say GM John Shaka quit as the team was leaving for its bubble in Edmonton. He says ownership made the situation impossible, and maybe he'll tell the full story down the road. Assistant GM Steve Sullivan is the interim replacement. Sporting KC in Vancouver played 90 scoreless minutes last night at the MLS tourney at Disney. KC then used PKs to reach the quarters, all after NYCFC took care of Toronto 3-1. And Michael Thompson won the 3M Open by 2 shots, his first PGA Tour win since 2013. DA, back to you.
Thank you, AB. And so we wait to see what happens on the Miami Marlins. Can they play tomorrow? They've got a game scheduled tomorrow against the Orioles. If they have 14 players that test positive, can they play the series? Do they have to get all these tests back, which could take 12 to 24 hours? What do you do? We'll see what happens with the Marlins. But right now, the Marlins are the story of Major League Baseball after the opening weekend. Interestingly, the Orioles are 2-1. So a good start for them coming out of opening weekend. They get a couple of forfeits from the Marlins. You're talking about a 3-1, 4-1 Orioles team. Time to celebrate if you're in Baltimore. When we come back here on the show, Advanced Analytics, our poll question after the Lou Williams story. Does the NBA need strip clubs inside Disney World's bubble? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, and so today's question after Lou Williams of the Clippers left for a family funeral, left the NBA bubble, and then found himself at Magic City, a strip club in Atlanta, photographed by his friend, who's a rapper, posted on social media. Then when he got into trouble, His rapper friend said, oh, that's just an old picture. I was just reminiscing. Yeah, sure you were. Lou Williams is wearing a mask from the NBA bubble. It can't be that old of a picture. Mraz's idea was the NBA should have a strip club inside the bubble. Do you think this is a good idea? On Twitter, 55% of you said no. On Facebook, 57% said no. The majority said no strip clubs inside the Disney bubble. No, it's a small world with Snow White, the seven dwarves.
Just build it in Space Mountain.
Tinkerbell stripping. Ugh. Here are some advanced analytics stats brought to you by the good people at Andrew Kaplan and Company. Magic City's Kitchen, which is their restaurant, has 4.5 stars on Yelp. Its signature wings are named after Lou Williams now. A 10-piece of Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings costs $15. Let me tell you, I would spend any amount of cash right now for a gold belly delivery of Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings. I could absolutely crush 10 Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings right now for breakfast. Sure I could.
DA, were they, I'm being sincere in asking this, do we believe, since everybody keeps saying that you, of course you eat the food there, when the pandemic happened, before Georgia reopened, were people doing curbside pickup and to-go dinners from Magic City?
I don't know about Magic City. I had read some articles, though, that this was how some strip clubs were staying in business during pandemic by offering curbside food service. Now, I don't know about you. I've never had the inclination to eat at a strip club. Every strip club I've ever been in strikes me as the type of place I wouldn't trust their kitchen. Some people, though, swear by strip club food. For me, I just never feel like this is the type of place I want to use their utensils.
Yeah, that's not the time. I don't mix business with pleasure. That's the way I would look at it. And Bart Scott used to tell me some of the best meals he got as an NFL player on the road happened the night before games at strip clubs, more so than big steakhouses. So, hey, take that for what it's worth. Some people live with that food.
I can only ask you this question, but may I ask you to clarify which is the business and which is the pleasure when it comes to eating at a strip club?
Oh, business is eating, right? Oh, like, I make a business of eating. Like, that is, you need that to fuel you, and I look at it as a very focused situation when I have my dinner. The pleasure would be the strip club. Dinner is not necessarily pleasurable. It's all about business, and you want to be buttoned up and take care of it the best you can with what you're in the mood for.
You could have went either way there. I wouldn't have been surprised. Either you would frame your eating as almost a second job. It is so important. It is so vital. It is something that you take so seriously. In fact, probably more disciplined about your eating than this job. Not probably, actually more disciplined about eating and your eating schedule and your options than this job. But I would also say I could see you considering dinner pleasure, that that's actually the most pleasurable experience, not going to see naked women, that actually your food would be the most pleasurable experience. You could have went either way there.
I guess you're right. I still look at food as a business, but there's no doubt there have been times where I've had like a hot fudge sundae or Reese's Pieces where it has just hit me right far more than a strip club would. Absolutely. Like if I was an NFL player and I was playing a game, let's say, in San Francisco, I was flying to play the Niners. For me, everybody in the team's going to strip club. No, I want to go to Ghirardelli and get that ice cream you and I got ahead of Super Bowl 50. Like, I would get far more pleasure and tickling out of the chocolate fudge and every bite of that ice cream. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. Then they could all go see everything they want to see at a strip club. Give me Ghirardelli and give me the ice cream. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, I saw your face and your reaction to the Ghirardelli chocolate, and I've never been with a buddy at a strip club that looked that in ecstasy. So
exactly.
Ghirardelli actually wins. Home Depot is here with everything that you need to do projects smarter, faster, and easier. The Home Depot is here to help, and they've got many ways to do so. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Tim is in Seattle. DA, do you think we gave up too much for Jamal Adams? Well, yes. I think that two first-round draft picks for a position that's not a quarterback, pass rusher, corner, or left tackle is going to be too much. I just don't believe in giving up two ones, especially when you're a team that drafts as well as the Seahawks for a position like safety. You know, if you're a team that busts on draft picks like the Browns all the time, trading away two ones might not be a bad thing because you stink at drafting anyway. But for the Seahawks, that's a lot of collateral for a safety position that's not, it doesn't necessarily get that type of value. And you knew the Jets had to trade him because they had no leverage. He couldn't come back and play for them after what he had tried to set fire to. So I did think the cost was too high for the Seahawks. Now, do I think Jamal Adams is a great player? I do. He's got a lot of talent. He's still ascending. They have a lineage of great defensive backs under Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll lets big personalities play well, so this could be a great fit for them. But if you're asking me the cost on acquiring Jamal Adams, two ones and a three, yeah, I think that was too high. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And Jody Mack was back on our airwaves over the weekend, which was great after a long hiatus. But the moment he came back, we had yet another cough. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Yeah. Jody Mack off sleeping on a couch, 15 packs of cigarettes and 15 energy drinks. What'd you think was going to happen?
I don't know what happened, but Jody is set up recording 15 different interviews with David Lennon of Newsday. I don't know why, but he just wants to keep ripping through these interviews. Let's tape it again. I got another question.
I tell you put the bomb on? I didn't tell you put the bomb on.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but Jody's actually chewing his Wawa cup right now. He's actually eating it.
They are the only...
He's snacking on it.
Excuse me.
Oh, he just had nine different Rooster Boosters.
And it should be noted, his Wawa cup is so old it has Kevin Cobb in an Eagles jersey on it. Early in the promotion.
And I'm going to be a crotchety old you-know-what if I last another 40 years.
Catch your 2002 Philadelphia Eagles.
That's Dick Vermeil.
Catch Ron Jaworski and your Philadelphia Eagles.
Brought to you by RC Cola.
Who does the old school, new school thing?
Do you love Tab? Get a 64-ounce Tab, and it's me, Philly's Cup. Hi, I'm Von Hayes for Tab.
Catch your 1983 Philadelphia Phillies all season long on TV6.
Excuse me.
Mickey Morandini has this cup, so should you.
Look, the Broad Street Bullies.
This thing gets a dollar off the Blockbuster rental of your choice.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Mraz, how do you feel about Giancarlo Stanton going yard with two monstrous blasts in the first weekend?
I love it. That's my guy right now. He's obviously raking. And look, I've said for a long time, I want him to succeed. He has absolutely stunk and been abysmal. But if Giancarlo's going to get up there and keep hitting bombs every single game and help the Yankees win, how can I not love him? I'm bowing at his feet right now. I hope this continues all year long.
How could you say my guy, though, when you've just beaten on him for years?
Because I like to think that, you know, a little negative, you know, booing and motivation helps a guy. And if I've been the ringleader of the anti-Giancarlo circus, you heard Adnan Verk talk about how great a shape he's in. He had to have had guys like me in the back of his head knowing he had to be in great shape and compete. So I'd like to think I've taken a small piece of this and done a good job in helping Giancarlo get to where he is.
So you think that he achieved his stardom and National League MVP award in his professional career, his motivation up until he became a Yankee was based on what? I mean, he didn't have you when he was developing into one of the best sluggers in the game.
Well, less pressure. I mean, it doesn't really cost anything to hit all those bombs for the Marlins when you're not going to make the playoffs. With the Yankees, I mean, if you're not performing, we're going to let you know, and you're going to have to rethink things and rethink about how you're going about your day. I mean, A-Rod said it last Thursday night. He's going to benefit from no crowd booing him. So I think there's something there to it, but I think his preseason mentality was all about guys like me, and it's helping. So I've helped the case.
Yeah, I'm glad you took credit for Giancarlo Stanton's big weekend. Of course you would. That'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Tomorrow, Trash Tuesday, and Jared Greenberg from the NBA bubble. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Connor Green, your associate producer. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Thanks to Andrew Bogish, our headlines extraordinaire every single day. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. I'm DA. The Mothership disconnects.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.